Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cult of the Unblinking Eye by Marvin Knight, narrated by Sean Hardesty. Chapter 1.
Come on, Theo, it's just a little party, Dean said over a board game. My old friends and I sat at a table in the newly reconstructed Castle Mac playing a board game. Something still wasn't quite right about the pieces, but we'd gotten as close as we could remember. Sam was winning, but he often excelled at this one in particular. Dean and I had a few armies left on the board and desperately fought over the gold mine. Obtaining it would be our last chance to oppose Sam's burgeoning trade empire. A little party that will include the entire leadership of the Cult of the Unblinking Eye, I grumbled. You know as well as I did that I just killed four of their members. They will be sworn to uphold the peace, Sam muttered, gaze fixed intently on his cards. There will be lots of elven demigods there to ensure they don't cause trouble. And don't forget about us. We'll be there, too. It would mean a lot to my daughter, Dean added. If you don't come, she'll be the only new demigod there. She was always a shy girl. I raised an eyebrow. Really? The Queen Lionva I knew drank, danced, and sang with her citizens. Not just the nobility, but random elves off the street. She was also no stranger to playing pranks of all manner on them. Her pranks could range anywhere from stealing your underwear to accidentally strapping you down in her dungeon. In short, the innocent young elf Dean imagined when he thought of his daughter had probably vanished long ago as she came into her own as a tricky and pervy queen. I couldn't imagine her being embarrassed about anything, let alone a simple party. But Sam and Dean seemed quite intent on me going with them, and though I didn't want to go, I couldn't deny that the idea of meeting most of the world's demigods all in one place was rather intriguing. I had some rather hard questions for them if they would all show up at once, starting with why hadn't they done anything about the planetary defense array? The part the Elven Star Dominion constructed was clearly faulty and in dire need of repairs, modifications, or just a general shutdown until they could get it to stop harvesting people for their souls. Even simply disabling it and just leaving the original shield portion gifted by their creator would be fine. We could do without the armies of automated war golems if it meant our towns and cities wouldn't get attacked every few centuries. The shield was enough to fend off things like a dragon swarm, which was all we really needed. Also, why had they not acted when the Witch of Frozen Blood had attacked the planet with the intent of claiming it? Saving the world had fallen to me, a humble sorcerer at the time. If any of the other demigods had stepped in, that climactic fight with Ilial as the Witch of Frozen Blood's avatar would have been a lot easier. The entire Deenian queendom was in shambles thanks to an orc invasion, followed by an army from the Cult of the Unblinking Eye, a vampire infestation, and then finally a massive golem attack. It was a wonder the nation was still standing at all. The only reason the royal family hadn't been attacked during their time of weakness was because I'd traveled to every neighboring country and conquered them all to make them into my vassals. The situation in Deenia was so bad that Dean and his daughter attempted to close down the kingdom entirely and reduce the royal family to a small family of elites and their retainers without the restrictions of rulership. Sam had done the same thing when he converted his faction into the Fateweaver Society. There will be free food, Sam offered helpfully. I figured there was no more point thinking it over. All right, fine, I'll come. But I can't promise I won't have some choice words for everyone there, especially the members of the Cult of the Unblinking Eye. They've attacked the Hearthwood for the last time. Don't worry, buddy. We'll be there to back you up, whatever happens. Just try not to pick a fight with every demigod there. If you break the rules of the Conclave, we'll have to find another planet to live on, and I suspect that'll be a major pain in the rear. Dean grinned. I'll restrict myself to just words. Within the Conclave, at least. The time would come when the Cult of the Unblinking Eye paid for their betrayal. But that time would have to wait until I'd realized the full power of the Wanderer's upgraded abilities provided by the QCA. Now that I was a demigod, I could at least match the power of the Cult of the Unblinking Eye's most powerful members. But I'd feel safer if a few of my matriarchs were demigods, too. Some, like Cora, were far from that level. even with my recent new advancements in dual cultivation theory. But others like Tivana had been at Sorcerer long enough that it might not be impossible for me to push them over the rest of the way and make them full-fledged demigods themselves. Any additional backup would be appreciated, but loyal backup that I could trust, like Sam and Dean, would only come from my existing companions. "How long do I have before this conclave?" I asked, looking at Sam. Dean also looked at him. "We haven't agreed on a date yet," Sam replied, "but I wouldn't expect it for at least 6 months. Demigods move slowly. We can afford to when our lifespans stretch into thousands of years. While most demigods free themselves of the responsibilities of rulership so they can focus on adventure, cultivation, or simply leisure, the various tasks we get up to often take considerable time to break away from." I nodded. "So I've got 6 months to come up with some backup. Could I do it? Could my women do it? We'd have to push hard, but somehow I was pretty okay with that. I want to get to the mid-demigod realm before the conclave. It wouldn't do to show up and be the weakest demigod there. What do you guys recommend?" I asked. Sam's eyebrows rose. "Besides greater patience?" "Training in the primordial world," Dean grinned. "Hell yeah! Let's kick some giant monster ass. This'll be great. I could use somebody else on the front lines. Sam's always in the back playing support. My power set isn't exactly conducive to punching a giant sky whale whose poop turns into islands," Sam replied. "Well, gentlemen, seems like we have a plan." I moved one of my last pieces on the board over to Dean's gold mine. "Also, Dean, your gold mine is mine." "Damn it! You distracted me from the fighting with your talk of fighting," Dean grumbled. Sam, Dean, and I made a plan for another adventure into the primordial world. In the meantime, we had a lot of work to do ourselves. With the normal infrastructure of Deenia in shambles, it fell to Dean to ensure Deenia was clear of monsters. Unfortunately for the people of Deenia, Dean saw anything beneath the wizard realm as nothing more than a pest, so I ended up lending him some of my forces to help clean the place up. If I hadn't, there would have been who knew how many giant village-destroying monsters still wandering the countryside who were too weak for him to hunt down. Sam and the entire Fateweaver Society were busy using their fate magic to heal the wounded and reverse time on destroyed infrastructure to restore it to its proper place. With their unique ability to reverse the flow of time, they were best suited to fixing broken things. Few were powerful enough to reverse death like Sam could, but reversing the crumbling of a stone wall was much easier. They were also doing an admirable job of peering into the future to see where there might be a major famine or monster attack, allowing us to deal with issues before they cropped up. I would certainly not want to be a criminal with the Fateweaver Society on patrol. I'd seen more than one aspiring criminal hoping to take advantage of the chaos find themselves in a cell the moment they made the decision. "You know, isn't that a bit unethical? You're arresting people who haven't done anything wrong yet. They just thought about committing a crime, not actually doing it." I turned to Sam for an explanation. "Well, our perception of the future doesn't firm up until there's a high probability of an event happening. Seeing every future is impossible," Sam shrugged. "But I guess technically it isn't fair."
"Technically, we're absolute rulers and we can do whatever we want."
Dean took a swig from an entire barrel of ale he carried over his shoulder. More than a little spilled and trickled down his shirt in the process.
"I, Dean, hereby declare that deciding to commit a crime is a crime."
"Thrilling," I rolled my eyes. "Just don't come to the Hearthwood with that kind of half-assed justice." Earth magic was second only to the Fateweaver Society's fate magic in terms of pulling civilization out of the ashes. While Sam and his companions could repair what was broken, they could only build something that had been built before and since been broken. They were helpless to create something that was actually new. And that's just what I planned on doing. Having so many of Deenia's cities ruined was actually an opportunity. Under most circumstances, it was hard to get any sort of large-scale civil works project done. Nobody wants a coal plant in their backyard. The leatherworking facility smells awful. Building a dam will cut down on the local fish population. It's always something. But when most of the nation has nothing left but a smoldering ruin, people are desperate for anything. So I diverted a few rivers, made some dams, built some roads, replenished some aquifers, made a couple harbors, built some irrigation canals, flattened some mountains, dug up some mines, and generally improved the state of things in Deenia. If Sam and Dean were thrusting the responsibility of running this nation into my lap, I wanted it to be a good nation. So that meant making getting things in place to run themselves. Famines were entirely preventable. I just needed to ensure there was more than enough usable land to go around. Besides, more cheap food usually meant more projects. And more subjects would mean greater prosperity for the entire nation, assuming I kept the food and goods flowing to them. One problem at a time, though. I could modernize Deenia's social structure when I was properly settled on a throne. For now, establishing extra waterways would be a job well done. Now that I thought about it, maybe I could expand some of them into rivers. Most low-level rebels were confined to marching their armies around the surrounding terrain, since only powerful elves could fly. Hell, the orcs had a massive army and still had to march on foot. I could prevent such a rebellion and invasion from happening again with a few more rivers and strategic, well-guarded bridges and fortresses. Just a few here and there. When I started, I just wanted to get the elves here back on their feet, but as I got into the project, there always seemed to be one little extra thing I could do to improve the productivity of the local land or fortify it against rebels, criminals, or invaders. Becoming an emperor wasn't supposed to bring such simple pleasures into my life, but I found them anyway. Chapter 2. I returned home after a long day of work and figured that as long as I was building for the rest of Deenia, the Hearthwood deserved some attention as well. And where better to practice than on the grounds of my own castle complex? There were a lot of buildings in that area now, with more cropping up all the time. I suppose it might even qualify as a palace these days, especially with all the extra buildings. Mac, I want to practice some architecture stuff. Bridges, columns, that sort of thing, I announced to the empty air. After a long stretch of silence, Mac answered me. Normally he was quicker than that, but with so much to monitor in the city and the dungeon below these days, his processors were at capacity.
Understood. I will catch any shoddy attempts at masonry before they crumble on top of anyone's head.
Mac was not only my AI companion, he was also a dungeon core. His powers had grown all the greater after we gathered up more dungeon cores from the expansive tunnel network beneath the Hearthwood and gave them to him. He'd quickly subjugated their wills and integrated them into himself as additional processing units. Now, those dungeon cores allowed him to make whatever he wanted, and in truth, he'd probably be even better than I was at constructing things while within the Hearthwood. But his presence only extended so far, so I was going to use my time here to practice with him. With his help, I'd be able to push my earth magic to build things I wouldn't dare attempt for the first time in the rest of Deenia. I flew over to an empty patch of ground and decided to start with a tower. Sometimes I got into a particularly wizardish mood, and that kind of thing would call for a tower.
This tower is stable, but one big earthquake and it will crumble, Mac replied when I finished a basic tower.
All right, I'll stiffen the walls and make them a little deeper. I waved my hands, making it wider and deeper. The top sloped, and now it looked more like a cone.
Better, but the rooms aren't going to be much use toward the top with so much of the walls sloped inward.
I frowned. Okay, how about a bunch of roofs like this? I vaguely remembered buildings from Earth with a bunch of circular roofs, and I tried my best to replicate the half-remembered image.
That would be called a pagoda, and it works, though it doesn't quite match the Renaissance-esque architectural style I'm transitioning the Hearthwood to.
I came here for engineering advice, not style criticism, I grumbled. But as I did so, I waved my hand, and the roofs vanished and were replaced with something that matched the wood and bright white stone of the nearby structures.
Appearances are important. They are everyone's first impression of you and your settlement. A clean and orderly settlement will lighten the spirits of all those who live there.
All right, all right. Say, you think I could go underground with this thing? I asked curiously. I knew the castle went as far underground as it did above ground. It led directly into the underground half of the city, full to the brim with weapon crafters and adventurers.
Certainly. Extending your foundations a little deeper will make your tower more stable as well. The exact structure you'll need will depend on what you're building, though.
How about a dungeon? I muttered as I did as Max said. Earth zeal flowed around me. This part of the build was a little harder because I couldn't see what I was working with. But the earth zeal was still there for my senses, so long as I reached out with my mind. It was a bit like building a sandcastle by feeling alone. But being underground, this part of the structure didn't have to look quite as pretty as what could be seen.
A dungeon, We have a few of those already. Some are filled with the soldiers of the Rakaran Queendom, and a few other enemies we've fought. We even have a few members of the Corpse Collector Company in storage.
Ah, crap. I forgot about those people. Are they all right? I asked, brows furrowed. I could have sworn this had come up a few times, but I'd never had time to deal with it.
Of course. I believe your orders were to turn them into power sources, so that's what they are being used for. You never gave the orders to let them go, so they're still being fed and cared for.
Well, we should probably let them go now that the Corpse Collector Company is long destroyed.
That might not be the best idea. If we released them, we wouldn't be able to power the street lamps, fountains, or the public cultivation chambers.
You mean to tell me we're powering a good chunk of the city off prisoners I forgot about? I shook my head.
Why hasn't this made it to my desk? It has, several times. Anyway, we can release them if you wish, but...
I waved him away. Just remind me again later. I won't deprive my citizens of valuable public resources. When I think of a replacement, we can let them go.
Okay. When should I remind you?
Anyway, I began, promptly clearing my mind for more important subjects. I'm building a dungeon, but not the kind of dungeon we already have. It needs to be comfortable, with good ventilation, and be able to hold a warm and steady temperature. Thick walls so it's quiet and undisturbed. It needs to be able to fit plenty of furniture.
Ah, I see. You're building a sex dungeon.
What? No. The thick walls are so the screams don't get out, and the furniture could be torture equipment.
And the good ventilation? The warm temperature?
Mac asked. I grumbled under my breath, even as I extended the tower several more stories downward. The area under the tower would actually be considerably larger than the area above it, complete with room for a swimming pool and hot tub on the lower floors. I'd have to bend ley lines a bit and recruit Argona to make some enchantments for the temperature. No, on second thought, this was the sort of thing that needed a personal touch. I'd have to craft those enchantments myself. I would have to hire out the odds and ends, though. Please tell the Whitewood clan I need more flooring. Stone just doesn't feel right underfoot.
I want you to know that I won't be responsible for cleaning your sex dungeon, Theo. Don't call it a sex dungeon. Giant tower of debauchery, then? What's wrong with your sex dungeon in the castle? Why do you need another one?
Mac asked. I sighed. Don't let me catch you sharing this with anyone. But the truth of the matter is that the castle and its surrounding grounds are getting a little crowded. I've got so many kids these days that it feels like a campus for a women's college. We've got daily classes for training up new members of the family, for crying out loud. We had a commencement ceremony for the latest birthday party. And worst of all, I lowered my voice to a whisper, I overheard somebody asking if it was possible to book the room for a few hours. I don't know who it was, and I don't want to know. But it's not a damn public facility. Nobody uses my sex dungeon but me.
So it is a sex dungeon?
I sagged in place. Yes, Mac, it's a sex dungeon. Don't spoil the surprise. After building my sex dungeon, I went on to construct several more buildings throughout the Hearthwood. The chaos from before allowed the city to sprawl quite a bit compared to its original dimensions. But after all the battles, few dared build things as tall as they once had. A considerable amount of budget residences were going underground so they could avoid getting caught in the crossfire of the constant apocalyptic battles that plagued the city. It made the city lose some of its charm, but I couldn't blame them. If I owned real estate in the Hearthwood, I would also be nervous about random demigods showing up to flatten the place every couple of months. How many times did that make this? Two? Three? The fact that I'd lost count was a bad sign. Since few others would be willing to risk building the city's new landmarks, the burden fell to me. I always wanted a nice clock tower, and I had plenty of practice from building my wizard's tower just moments ago. I went to the center of town where everybody would be able to see and hear it, and erected a tall tower and sturdy building. There were no bells or machinery inside it for now, but making some of my kids figure out how to build a mechanical clock seemed like a good test of their physics skills. Magic was all well and grand, but I credited many of my early accomplishments with magic to my understanding of science rather than cultivation. With a clock tower built, I figured I might as well expand the train system too. Before, it had mainly been used for getting between settlements, but at this point, the city was large enough it justified cheap and affordable transportation for getting around the settlement itself. True, anyone using a flying sword would be able to get around faster on their own, but not everyone owned a flying sword. Unlike most rulers on this world, I planned to lend a helping hand to the newly manifested Heartwielders. Touring Deenia, their situation always seemed a bit sad to me. Despite having by far the greatest numbers, they were often overlooked in terms of policy and public works. The higher-tiered members of society monopolized all the power and influence. Many of them were even all right with their lot, each content in the belief that someday they would rise in cultivation and gain access to all the privileges that entailed. The trouble with the lack of care limited opportunities to make such advancements. A Heartwielder could only work as far as they could walk from where they lived, and they were just as likely to die on their first dungeon dive as they were to use the dungeon to reach Mage Acolyte. Nobody bothered to train or transport them. I planned to make the Hearthwood different. From the rumors I'd heard of the Elven Star Dominion, they'd been different. While arrogant and overconfident to a fault, they raised up their entire civilization so that reaching the Wizard Realm for them was like what reaching Mage Acolyte was for most of Deenia. Just a stepping stone. That all boiled down to trains running around the city at regular intervals, as well as lifts to reach the top of the towering trees, or to take prospective dungeoneers to the dungeons in the Undercity, without the need for an hours-long hike down natural caves or a lengthy climb up a rickety rope ladder. My previous projects were still bearing fruit as well. I'd built a small dam downriver for a constant water source and energy for the city, should anyone figure out how to use it. That was still a work in progress, but I got the turbine and walls back in order. Maybe some belts or pulleys could tug all the new trolleys and elevators around. That'd be another assignment for my kids to figure out. Maybe having an entire college campus's worth of children on my property wasn't so bad. By the time everything was settled, the Hearthwood was going to look positively steampunk. That would be a day worth bragging about. Sam and Dean had been active for more than 400 years, and had managed to bring more than a few sparse parts of Deenia out of the Middle Ages. And the Cult of the Unblinking Eyes territories looked like they were from the classical period. Here in the Hearthwood, we had a space program and everything. After finishing up with the city, I doubled back home. While I wasn't about to do any dual cultivation in the castle, it was still a nice place to stay. Plus, it had most of my private entrances to the Wanderer. That magic ship was the only reason I was still around to this day. So, how's the Wanderer doing, Mac? I asked, hoping he hadn't shared the news of my new dungeon with my women yet.
She is doing wonderfully, especially now that you've given her that special treat, Mac replied.
I smiled. Ah, the cell phone with the QCA on it. How could I forget? I hope she's got something worthwhile for me from it.
She's nearly done implementing the QCA's features into her own systems. You should be able to access them now.
I focused my mind on seeing my stats. Nothing happened.
Status,
I said. Still nothing. I waved my hands in front of me, but nothing happened.
We're still working out the kinks. For now, you can activate them with a simple command. And that command is... Mac, you devilishly handsome and incredibly clean robot, please bring up my status window.
Mac, bring up my status window.
Spoil sport,
Mac grumbled. A moment later, a modified form of the screen I'd seen on the phone appeared before me. Welcome to the Quantum Cultivation Assistant, user. Cultivation Insights. Body Cultivation. World Titan Fiend Body. Diamond Skin. Progress to Diamond Muscle, 38%.
Tip, crossing the threshold to diamond muscle will require deepening the nodes of power dispersed throughout your body, which will require substantial earth aspect zeal and potentially the assistance of an exotic cultivation material to facilitate the process. Spirit cultivation, earth aspect, early demigod. Progress to mid-demigod, 24%. Tip, your spirit and body cultivation are in resonance, and you possess several unique techniques to enhance the process. Consider using your spirit cultivation to fuel your body cultivation. Spirit cultivation, mind aspect, mid-sorcerer. Progress to late sorcerer, 25%. Tip, your body and comprehension have already reached the demigod realm. The right items and a source of raw power are all you need to bring your mind cultivation up to par. Elemental symbiote cultivation, mid-sorcerer. Progress to late sorcerer, 57%. Tip, Minerva, the death aspect spirit that dwells within you, can be enhanced by providing her with resources and assisted with additional insights provided by you. Bridging your connection to a higher level will facilitate the sharing of knowledge. Consider additional dual cultivation sessions with her included.
Not bad. The QCA didn't recognize Minerva last time, I said as I inspected the screen before me. The tips were also quite handy. Sam and Dean had shared most of these ideas with me before, but having them all spelled out for me was nice. I had planned on doing a little dual cultivation sooner or later anyway, but now I had the perfect excuse. What about the features the Wanderer promised me? I asked. Like that merit shop, and sharing these tips with my women?
Access to missions and cultivation tips will both have to happen from your throne room. You'll find your follower limitations have dramatically increased, even though you haven't improved the room. As for the merit shop, I'll bring that up in a moment.
Welcome to the merit shop. You have 2.5 million points to spend. There are over 4,000 unique items available for purchase in the merit shop. The four most suitable items for you have been sorted for ease of viewing. Apple of the Celestial Titan, 200,000 points. This fruit is a legendary item on the Orcish homeworld and is famous for its amazing effects on body cultivators. It is said to be able to raise a normal orc all the way to bronze skin with a single bite, and can even improve the cultivation of diamond skin cultivators. Essence of Gaia's Touch, 175,000 points. This Earth Aspect treasure comes from the recently destroyed remains of a Nature Aspect world. It has a strong affinity for both life and Earth, and can be consumed to enhance the probability of Earth Aspect concept insights. Ashes of an Immortal, 300,000 points. These ashes contain a small fraction of the remains of an immortal ascendant. They emit enormous quantities of death zeal and contain insights into death itself, creating dramatic improvements for all Sorcerer Realm Death Aspect cultivators. Will Tempering Crown, 125,000 points. This crown contains a hostile spirit of the mind aspect that will constantly attack the wearer. The constant mental struggle will hone the user's mental defenses over time.
Not a bad haul. I'll take them all.
I quickly swiped through some menus. Each of these items seemed perfectly suited for continuing my cultivation. This was perfect. I had that demigod party coming up, and I didn't want to look like a mediocre demigod.
I was already pretty strong as far as demigods went, with many victories as proof. But it was one thing to know I could fight. It would be another for the other demigods to feel it in my aura. I read over the description of Essence of Gaia's Touch again, curious.
Hey, do you think this thing came from the world of woods and wilds? You know, the planet we just blew up?
Do you really want to know the answer to that?
Mac asked. I frowned.
No, I guess not. It would just make me feel bad when using it. I'll take it anyway, though.
The items have been moved to your dimensional storage. You can inspect and utilize them at your convenience, Mac announced. You'll notice you have quite a few points.
Yeah, it's nice to be rich. Hey, I remember one of the other upgrades the Wanderer proposed was the ability to assign quests to followers, generating more points for me. We should set that up. Brainstorm some quests I can send my matriarchs out on. As for the points, I want us to take our defenses for the city as high as the Wanderer can support.
We are currently at maximum capacity for level-reducing sentry towers, but we may gain more capacity by upgrading the mana generator several times.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?